Okay, here are some features of ab initio quantum chemistry and density functional theory. I mean, ab initio quantum chemistry works with in a hierarchical way with known functionals, no adjustable parameters, arbitrary accuracy achievable, but it's often not cheap. Density functional theory starts from unknown functionals. Calibration is necessary, but has a good cost-performance ratio. And our dream would be to have ab initio reliability at the cost of density functional calculations. I'm sorry. Now, I want not to encourage the identification of ab initio quantum chemistry with wave function theory, because wave functions have some disadvantages. The main disadvantage of the wave function is that it contains too much information. We don't really want to parameterize the state in terms of the wave function. I mean, you know that, I'm sorry. You know that the overlap of any approximate wave function goes to zero for a large number of particles. But the quantities which are really needed to characterize the state, namely the one particle density matrix, the two particle density matrix, or the cumulants, have the same property as the density. They scale, so to say, with the zeroth order of the particle number. And so the argument which has often been put forward by Walter Kohn, that density function has advantage, so to say, that it is even valid for a large number of particles, is no longer exclusive if you use different quantities to characterize the state. So I would say modern ab initio quantum chemistry avoids wave functions. As I said, too much wave function has too much information, but the density has too little information. Also, the one particle density matrix has too little information. For the full information on the state, we do need the two particle density matrix at least. So this is somewhat in conflict with what you heard in the last lecture, but I cannot go into detail in the moment. So, I mean, the earliest many particle approaches were mean field theories. The theory of Hartree is somewhat forgotten, but in present languages, one would say this is an orbital functional theory with local potentials, which does not contain an unphysical self-interaction, an orbital-dependent mean field theory, which has some advantages over Hartree-Fock theory, although we all would say Hartree-Fock is superior, because the problem with Hartree-Fock is the non-local exchange. And Slater, in 1951, was the first, so to say, to replace the non-local exchange by a local exchange, based on earlier work by Dirac, essentially, for the exchange in a homogeneous electron gas. And the strange thing was that although this method was suggested as an approximation to Hartree-Fock, it had in some respect better results. Especially, one could describe excited states in terms of Hartree-Fock later, which one could not determine the Hartree-Fock. Excited states, so to say, are possible at this level. This just also remind you early approaches which were before. Now, the common origin of both ab initio quantum chemistry and density function theory is this energy expression, where the write the energy as two parts, an external energy and an internal energy. The external energy is in the action with the external field, and this is a known functional of the density. The external energy is a known functional of the density, whereas the internal energy consists of various parts. The kinetic energy is a known functional of the one particle density matrix. The Coulomb energy is a known functional of the density. The exchange energy is also depends on the one particle density matrix. For the collation energy, you need the two particle density matrix. These are the quantities. So if you go from the wave function via the two particle density matrix, one particle density matrix density, you have a continuous loss of information. And, well, let me just continue this. Now, we can think of methods which are between density function and wave function theory. In the genuine density function theory, you parameterize the wave function in terms of a density rho, and then you have unknown functionals, namely the kinetic energy is an unknown function of the density, and the exchange correlation function is an unknown function of the density. In Kronchamp theory, you parameterize the state with the best idempotent approximation of the one-particle density matrix. This is usually not formulated this way, but this is sort of the most consistent interpretation of Kronchamp. And then you describe the bulk of the kinetic energy as a function of this approximate one-particle density matrix. You only need, so to say, the correlation correction of the kinetic energy as function of the density and the exchange correlation as function of the density. The next step will be the orbital function theory. Like Kronchamp, you characterize the state by a best one-particle density matrix. However, you use the possibility to express the exchange energy in terms of this approximate one-particle density matrix, so you are only left with the correlation correction with the kinetic energy and with the correlation energy. So it's, so to say, the unknown quantity, the unknown function, the importance of the unknown function is reduced on this way. In one density matrix functional theory, you have only the correlation energy, so to say, but you describe it by the exact one-particle density matrix, so you only have as unknown the correlation energy as an unknown function of the one-particle density matrix. In the two-particle density matrix function theory, you parameterize the state by the one-particle density matrix and the two-particle equivalent, and then you have no unknown function to worry about it. The same is the two-particle density matrix theory. Okay. Just a few words on the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem. I mean, the paper by Hohenberg-Kohn of 1960 is, if one formulates this in a friendly way, highly problematic from the point of view, or from the mathematical point of view, because these authors did not at all worry about the domains of the operators and the functions which they considered. A much improved formulation was given by Levy, as you have heard this morning. I prefer the formulation by Elliot Lee because this is mathematically rigorous, and this has a very nice feature that the whole Hohenberg-Kohn theorem reduces to an existence theorem of a universal functional, which is just a Legendre transformation, and the variation principle, which is, so to say, just the inverse of the Legendre transformation. So all other statements usually related to the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem can be forgotten. You only need, so to say, these two things. Anyway, you cannot use the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem to derive a density functional theory. So it is not of very, very practical, not of a great practical importance. Now, if we look, so to say, a hierarchy of density functional theory, density functional methods, we have genuine density functional theory, and the only genuine density functional theory that has played a role in the history was the Thomas Fermi model. In the Thomas Fermi model, one expresses the kinetic energy as a function of the density as it is exact for a homogeneous non-interacting fermion gas. So this is, so to say, a density functional theory. In order to make it somewhat meaningful, one has to improve by the Weizsäcker correction. One tried to include exchange, but this worsens the result, and therefore this Dirac exchange was usually forgotten was disregarded because it corrects, so to say, the Thomas Fermi method in the wrong direction. And representability, it's to some extent here. I mean, this expression for the kinetic energy comes from a formulation in terms of fermions. So the fermionic character is in this here. So in some extent, the N representability is in this functional here. This function is simple. It has the correct limit, non-relativistic limit for large set. Mathematicians like it very, very much. I mean, the expansion in terms of particle number is still very popular in mathematical physics. The question of self-interaction does not arise. I mean, if it is a theory in terms of the density, the self-interaction is not meaningful. In order to define the concept of self-interaction, you have to introduce orbitals. It's not the Thomas Fermi theory. Kronchamp theory is not a genuine density function theory. This is often forgotten. It's called this way. But the essential point, essential thing of sum theory is that one avoids to express the kinetic energy as a function of the density. One has learned from mean field theory, of course. Mean field theory were before Cohn-Sham. And the essential thing is that a state is parametrized by the best idempotent approximation of the bound particle density matrix. And then one automatically gets the bulk of the kinetic energy correctly. This is the main feature. And I think one is somewhat sincere, one would say Cohn-Sham theory is to 90% mean field theory and to 10% density function theory. I mean, what remains is, so to say, that the exchange correlation energy is formulated as a function of the density. And this is the same in the first, in the Cohn-Sham LD theory is the same as Dirac's later. So the exchange correlation energy is, so to say, is the only function of the density. Good. If I count generations of density function theory, I would do it this way. Well, Cohn-Sham, I would say LSD, linear spin density, I would say this is the first generation. The zeroth generation, because it operationally is hardly different of Cohn-Sham LSD, is the theory of slate exchange. And then I would say the minus first generation is Thomas Fermi theory, which is a genuine density function theory. Now, if you go beyond Cohn-Sham, an important role was the generalized gradient approximation. I mean, associated with the name of Becke, Perdue, and others. All other improvements, like Perdue's Jacob's ladders, would here be at the same level, at the same level of generation, because one still is in the Cohn-Sham frame insofar as the exchange correlation energy is regarded as a function of the density. And the bulk of the kinetic energy is in terms of this one particle density matrix. The next generation in this classification, this hierarchy, is orbital function theory. So one does as in Cohn-Sham, but one no longer considers just this determinant, but also the orbitals. And this means one is able to express the exchange energy correctly, exactly. One only needs to express the correlation energy as a function of the density. Well, the next step is to use density matrix function theory, because then everything is, so to say, one only needs an unknown functional of the density matrix. Okay. Maybe I should not go in too many details here. The orbital function theory is also optimized potential theory. In a way, it has little to do with density function theory. It goes back to a theory by Talman and Zitschwick on a simplification of Hartree-Fock in terms of optimized potentials. In this field, because it's an orbital function theory, one can remove the self-interaction. I mean, in this type of theory, for the first time, the reduction of the self-energy enters. It plays an important role. One does need a new parameterization for the correlation functions. Therefore, these methods have still some problems. Often one ignores the correlation completely and restricts to the exchange only. But it is obvious one needs completely new functionals if one treats the exchange exactly. And the question, are the orbitals functions of the density? In my opinion, all these arguments are invalid. That claim that one can represent the orbital as function of the density, it comes, so to say, from a misuse of the chain rule of differentiations. Okay, let's go further. Now, density matrix function theory, I'm not telling too much about this in the moment, because density matrix function is, so to say, really in the middle between ab initio theory and density function theory, density matrix function theory. Now, if I come from the other side, from ab initio theory, I have first to define quantities, operators, and so. I like to formulate this in terms of excitation operator, one-part excitation operator, two-part excitation operators. Then the expectation value of these excitation operators are the one-particle, two-particle density, higher-order density matrices. This is a scaling property of the density matrix. So the two-particle density matrix scales with n squared, but the one-particle density matrix scales with n. Okay, forget this. So I start from a Fock space Hamiltonian. I mean, the Fock space Hamiltonian, which is here, is equivalent to the configuration space Hamiltonian if we introduce these matrix elements. And I have a Fock space Hamiltonian on a finite basis. Now, the essential thing is the Fock space Hamiltonian contains of matrix elements of the one-particle operator, two-particle operator, and excitation operators. And you see easily that the number of parameters, so to say, is of the order n to the fourth. This is the number of elements in the two-particle, two electron matrix elements. And I think it is an important paradigm. One should try to formulate solutions also in this minimal number of parameters. This is much larger than the density function theory. I would say density function theory corresponds to a subminimal parametrization. But I think it's an important challenge, so to say, to find such a parametrization. Not more parameters than those which characterize the Fock space Hamiltonian. And this is still not fully formulated, but it is on the way, and I think this is one of the most important challenges at present. An essential paradigm of many electron theory is the separability, which means if I have a Hamiltonian, if I divide the one particle spaces into two subspaces that are completely exclusive, and the Hamiltonian then becomes a sum of a Hamiltonian subsystem A and subsystem B, then the wave operator, which transforms, so to say, a model Hamiltonian to an exact Hamiltonian, the wave operator, should be multiplicatively separable. So the point is the Hamiltonian is additively separable, the total energy of the transformed Hamiltonian is additively separable, but the wave operator is multiplicatively separable, and one possibility to formulate everything in terms of additively separable quantities is the coupled cluster ansatz, for instance, of this type. So this separability implies extensivity, a connected diagram theorem, and similar things. Linear scaling is possible in this case. The coupled cluster ansatz is very popular. It is separable, which is important, but it's not a minimal parametrization. The coupled cluster ansatz contains much too many parameters, so one should, especially if it goes to high excitations, one should do something different. Now, these are some cases of minimal parametrization. We have heard the last lecture, the two-particle density matrix function theory is one possibility, but it has problems because it is not separable. Then there is the possibility of contracted Schrödinger equations, the irreducible contracted Schrödinger equations, the Nakatsuchi theorem, the Neuling conjecture. But I have not. I say a little bit more on this last point of the density cumulant function theory, because there have some progress has been achieved recently. These are conditions, so to say, which the one-particle density matrix has to satisfy. Cannot go into details. So the one-particle density matrix theory, suggested by Bopp, a German physicist, who just, so to say, started from this expression for the energy, and he optimized this expression for the energy in terms of an effective Hamiltonian and a two-particle density matrix, and minimized this, and he got disastrous results. And this was then later explained by Coleman in terms of the n-representability problem. One has to impose n-representability conditions. This means one has to choose the two-particle density matrix such that it can be derived from a wave function, from a fermionic wave function. So in some way, the wave function that we wanted to get rid of sneaks in again, and it looks like that one has to formulate a theory in terms of the wave function if one wants to get results. What does one do if one does not satisfy the n-representability problem is one mixes in wave function components which are not fermionic, which have partial bosonic character, and these lower the energy and you violate the variation principle. One can impose these necessary n-representability conditions. We have heard about this, but they are not too helpful. And let me just, how much time have I left?
Well, you have, I guess, 10 minutes, maybe
more. Okay, good. And view graph, I just wanted to point out I think the history might have gone in a different way. I mean, when one realized, so to say, that one can formulate the energy in terms of a known function of the two particle density matrix, and So one had the choice, either using an unknown function of the density or a known function of the density matrix, but with an unknown n-representability problem. If at that point people would have cared to find approximate n-representability conditions, this history might have gone in a different way. But the two branches, so to say, of research were so different. In density matrix functional theory, people wanted to use exact n-representability conditions and nothing else. Whereas in density function theory, one did not care about exact density functions, they were not available anyway, and used approximate functions. Now, let me come to the concept of cumulants. A cumulant is, for instance, a two-particle cumulant is the difference between the two-particle density matrix and what one would expect for the two-particle density matrix if the particles were independent. Fermions, but independent. So this is the, so to say, a measure of the correlation, in a way. And they have certain properties. Essentially, important property is this: density cumulants are additively separable. The trace of the cumulant scales with the number of particles and so on. And there are trace, partial trace relations, a lot of things which one can study. And this is interesting. You can, so to say, derive exact relations between the cumulants, and these are, if you want, n-representability conditions. They hold, so to say, up to second order in a perturbation parameter of Müller-Blessel perturbation theory, for instance. But at this level, these are exact relations, not inequalities. And if you write the energy in terms of the density cumulants, you get something like, well, you can formulate the energy in terms of the one particle density matrix, one particle cumulant, and what you get is something like here, an expression which contains the Fock operator, generalized Fock operator, and the two electron part with the density cumulant, which is, so to say, the correlation energy. Here you can see in this formulation, you can easily divide the interaction energy into Coulomb interaction, exchange interaction, and correlation energy. And now the idea of two-particle cumulant function theory is: I start from an energy expression in terms of the one-particle density matrix, in terms of the two-particle cumulant, and the information, the whole information about the state which I need is in this density one-particle density matrix and two-particle density cumulant. They contain the same information as the two-particle density matrix, but these quantities are separable. Each of them is separable. Then it's easy to take care of the n-representability condition for the one-particle density matrix. This is trivial. I mean, the eigenvalues must be between 0 and 1. These are separable, but there is a relation. Gamma, one-particle density matrix, two-particle cumulant, are related by such a trace relation, partial trace relation. They cannot be treated independently. Now we can a trick. And this is, so to say, something which we have learned from density function theory. Something like in Kuhn-Chumps theory, we introduce a best one-particle approximation to the two one particle density matrix. The best idempotent approximation to the one particle density matrix, I call this kappa. So my one particle density matrix is divided into two parts, you know, a part kappa, which is idempotent, and a part tau, which has the trace is zero, and I wanted to minimize the trace of tau squared. And if I do this, I get a relation, so to say, the deviation from idempotency of the two particle density matrix is related to this tau. And we get now completely independent quantities. We can minimize the energy independently with respect to kappa and with respect to lambda. And this decomposition of the energy, these are exact equations. Now, at this point, I must introduce n-representability conditions. And I use the approximate n-representability conditions which I've shown you before. I insert them, and then I can express all cumulants in terms of some particular cumulants with two lower indices of occupied orbitals and two upper indices of virtual orbitals. I get something like this. Now we have a part, so to say, which is essentially the Hartree-Fock expression. We have a part which represents the correlation and which is, so to say, here expressed in terms of this generalized Fock operator and the two-particle cumulants. Yeah, these are just definitions. We must make the energy stationary. And the first iteration is Hartree-Fock. This is relatively easy. Here are the approximate n-representability conditions, which allows me to express all these cumulants in terms of these simple, so to say, basic cumulants, if you like. And these are, so to say, details which we don't want to insist on. We get here an energy formulation that is formally quadratic in the cumulants. I say formally because here these energies contain, so to say, correction terms which also depend on lambda. But we can, so to say, if we make this stationary, we get pseudo-linear equations for these cumulants, and we can solve them iteratively, and we have non-linearities, which are in these epsilons, which are very important, because if we would ignore these non-linearities here, we would get a C by zero type of approximation. And this is the kind of equation which we have to solve. It's relatively simple. And to illustrate the present results which were obtained by Andy Simonet very recently, these are, so to say, bond length errors relative to CCSDT. And what is important to compare is the density cumulant function theory. This is this magenta type. CCSDT, which is this light blue. So we see the density cumulant function theory is slightly better than CCSD, and this is, so to say, a result which seems to be more or less generally possible. One can also improve this, so to say, one can improve the n-representability conditions, so to say, in order to take care also of the three-particle excitations. So this is, I think, essentially what we wanted to tell with respect to the density cumulant function theory. I mean, there are some of these. This is not so important. I mean, but it's an interesting aspect because there is a relation to Kronchamp theory. But I mean, in Kronchamp theory, we have local potentials, and this just makes some. One can compare this with the Müller function. It's also an interesting kind of thing, but I guess I just repeat what are the conclusions here on the density cumulant function theory. The bulk of the energy expression does not depend on n-representability conditions. So n-representability only enters, so to say, for the correlation energy, not for the bulk. this is different to the variational two matrix theory. There's some flexibility in the approximate n representability conditions, so one can easily improve them. Yeah. The fact that we end up with equations that resemble those of coupled cluster theory puts us on safe grounds. But we have advantages with respect to coupled cluster theory. Our equations are Hermitian. We can easily formulate gradients and other things, so we do not need set vector or other ugly things to go beyond, so to say, just the stationary formulation. Lambda is additively separable and is usually very sparse. This is, so to say, important, especially in a localized representation. So the linear scaling should come out more or less automatically. We get a new importance to the best idempotent approximation kappa of gamma, somewhat like in Brückner theory. And we may, maybe I just point out what is the difference to Kuhn-Chum for this best approximation of the one particle density matrix. I mean, in our case, so to say, we want to get a minimum distance in Hilbert space, so this is a kind of Brückner orbital of this type of thing. Whereas in Kuhn-Chum theory, we want that the density corresponding to this best density matrix approximation is the exact density. But these, so to say, these criteria should not lead to very different results, I guess. So I have more stuff, but I think it's better I stop here and we have some time for the discussion.
Thank you, Professor Kurzeli.
The best way to look at orbital functional is, in fact, looking at them as functional of the potential.
Yes.
That is the best way.
Yeah.
The formulation of potential functional theory.
I think it's
good. The comment is that, the question, go back to your first equation. It's really interesting. The equation number one.
Yeah.
The overlap between the approximate wave function and the exact wave function goes to zero exponentially with number of pi.
Yeah, yeah.
So that looked like very puzzling to me. It appeared to be correct, but very puzzling to me. And the puzzle I have is it come from the computational wave function for solid. There's a big community of quantum Monte Carlo simulation, which exactly what they do is trying to approximate the wave function. And they get very good number, they get even the LDA energy for homogeneous electron gas that they use to do LDA. So I'm not making the connection between your equation there and the practice of quantum mechanics.
I would agree that in Monte Carlo one really cares for the wave function. I mean, one does not use density matrix and other things. Yeah? But of course one has to satisfy cusp relation and other things. I mean, locally the wave function must locally very well approximate it, otherwise one doesn't get meaningful results. And I only don't know, only don't think that you can apply this to large systems. I mean, for bosons, yes, but I mean for fermions, the size limitation of Monte Carlo masses is very limited, and if you have a small number of electrons, wave functions here are very good. Because there's another example, and this is the method of Nakatsuchi. Yeah? And Nakatsuchi really solves, so to say, the Schrödinger equation, and he gets wave functions. He does not get density matrix and other things. But also he uses very small systems.
But,
yeah?
But I agree with what you said, but Nakatsuchi is not, but the quantum Monte Carlo community, actually, they're addressing condensed matter. They're solving many, many electrons and approaching the homogeneous electron gas, which is infinite number of electrons.
quick comment on what you're saying. I think there's a common confusion between quality of a wave function and quality of S.
I enjoy your comments, the organization, the cumulant. But you did say when you started, you said that you like Leib's theory better than mine in that it is more rigorous. Could you please tell me what you didn't find rigorous in the three equations I had up?
Is probably the domains of operators. I mean, Leib puts a lot of stress on defining, so to say, the domains of potentials, the domain of densities, and so on. Yeah?
But there was nothing, not a single aspect of what I had that wasn't rigorous. What you were talking about is convexity, etc.
Yeah.
And the point is that you just replace the constrained search of wave function ensembles in your convex, and even in your case, it's a very rare occurrence that you don't have convex.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next thing you said is the use of the wave functions, essentially, there's no practical value way of getting it, wrote. Or every single approximate functional is based on constraints using wave functions from the adiabatic connection and everything else. It's the fact that you have the wave functions in there that allow you to derive the constraints with the approximations. If you want to use Legendre transform is powerful in other ways, for instance, in the Yang-Wu method for getting that the potential is there. That I can agree. But if you didn't have that wave function expectation value, you would never get anywhere in density functional theory. We would be back to where Thomas Fermi was.
Yeah, I mean, you see, if I'm going to be frank, what I don't like is the argument of Homberg and Kuhn that the density determines the potential, potential determines the Hamiltonian, then you have just to solve the Hamiltonian and you get, so to say, your state. I mean, this is, so to say, just the step which one wants to avoid, and in reality the situation never arises that you want to get the potential from the density, because the density is always given at the outset because you have a Hamiltonian. Yeah? So this is in no way helpful. This is not something which arises in reality, and this is, so to say, a way which leads from the density in an unknown fashion to the wave function. Now your approach is a little different, but again, one can ask, is it easier to perform the constraint variations? This means first, so to say, take a certain density, optimize the wave function, all the wave functions which lead to the same density, or whether it's not easier to solve, so to say, the full CI wave function at the outset.
Well,
yeah?
The answer to the question is, when I put up f of rho as the minimum of psi, it's not meant to be done.
Yeah.
It establishes the existence of f of rho, and you use that to derive properties.
It's either
the original Homberg cone functional expressed in terms of wave function, or this constraint circuit have been used to derive properties like basic coordinate scaling, dimensionality, adiabatic connection. There isn't a single property that has not been derived from this Legendre transform. Not one.
Yeah.
The way you describe, not a single property has been derived.
But this is exactly what I like, because so this is the main thing is the main thing is the Legendre transformation. Yeah? I mean, the existence of a universal functional is, so to say, the Legendre transformation of the energy as a function of the external potential. It cannot be used to derive functionals, yes.
No, it can't. That's right.
My question is, how does the cost of this new method scale with system size, and how does it compare to CCSD?
It is essentially like a CCSD, but with a smaller prefactor.